I'm Cynthia Rothrock, and you're listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box.
I'm Casper Van Dien, and you're listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box.
Hi, I'm Christos Gate.
Hey, this is writer Fred Van Lente.
Hi, this is Ruth Fletcher Gate.
I'm Barry Gregory.
Hi, this is Derek Donovan. And
this is Victor Dandridge.
Hey, this is Kevin Sorbo here, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box. And really, do some thinking, seriously.
Hey, everybody, and welcome once again to Thinking Outside the Long Box. My name is Thomas Strange, and with me, as always, are my best friends since I was an itty-bitty kid. Down in the Death Star's dark, dark hold, Michael Manning. How you doing, Mike?
I am doing excellent. It's very dark in the dark, dark hold.
As well it should be. That's where they keep the bad stormtroopers, and you were never a great one. Josh, how's everything going up in Boston?
I am just living the dream after recovering from a horrible illness this weekend.
Is part of the dream paying way too much for rent and commuting hours and hours and hours to work?
I was hoping to leave that part behind, but you know, keep it on.
Everyone has their own kind of dream. Tommy, you're in Boston living the dream also, aren't you?
I am. I am super living the dream. This past weekend was the first time I had a full weekend off in April.
Your dream seems to be my nightmare.
It's totally my nightmare, too.
I just bought Stately Strange condo up in Boston, so I'll be feeling your pain soon enough. Well, everyone, welcome in. And today we're going to be talking about DC in space.
In space.
Space.
Thank you guys for having my back on that. We're going to talk about some of the characters that are in space, some of the characters and some of the comic books that take place around space and space centric. Now, usually we have to give a background story, but I think space needs no introduction. What do you think, Mike?
I'll agree with you, although I'm sure the vacuum of space, all that cold and dark like Louisiana, will not be offended by our lack of background on it.
Well, we could have special guest Neil deGrasse Tyson say a few words. Neil, are you there?
Oh, man, Skype dropped him.
We totally had Neil deGrasse Tyson all set to explain what space was. Oh, well, Skype. All right, who wants to go first when talking about their favorite DC comic characters in space?
I guess
Josh. Josh, thanks for piping up. I knew you would.
So a long time ago when I was first getting into comics, both Mike and Tom sort of bestowed upon me parts of their collection. Tom, you gave me a good portion of my early X-Men comics, and Mike immediately put me on to Legion, because I hadn't read a lot of the other DC material at the time, so I wasn't really into Batman, The Flash, or Superman. And I took an immediate shine to Legion. It was a great story. It was sort of removed from the DC universe, but still had people involved. I mean, you know, Vril Dox, Derlin Stratus Stealth, the initial team members, and of course, early in the series, maybe issue somewhere in issue the first five issues, Lobo the main man came into play, and of course, who doesn't love Lobo?
Lobo.
He was, you know, just the animosity between him and Vril Dox and his overwhelming power and coarseness drew me right into the character, and just a lot of the interplay between the sort of the big cast. That was like kind of like a, you know, the Justice League, but I think the power level was set pretty low. But they were doing, you know, some investigating, and there was political intrigue, and it just had, I think, a little bit of everything. A lot of good characters, and everybody loves the arrival of Gargantua. That's just probably one of my favorite issues of all time.
Wait, I got to make sure I understand. Gargantua, wasn't he the world's most, on his planet, the giant, the strongest, the biggest badass on his entire planet. Was that the, am I thinking of the right guy?
You are absolutely thinking of the
right
guy.
And then he flies in under much fanfare, and what happens next?
When he arrives, the ship he arrives in is enormous, and then the emissary for their people comes out, and he's like 8 inches tall, and Gargantua's like 3.5 feet tall.
So he's the largest, most monstrous being on his planet at a whopping 3.5 feet tall. What happens next?
And then Stealth is there to be the emissary for the for Legion, and she laughs, and Gargantua carries a staff. And Vril says, hey, I apologize for her, but where she's from, laughing is the highest form of compliment. And so Gargantua jabs her in the eye with his staff, and he says, a poke in the eye, the highest form of compliment where I come from.
We laughed and loved that stupid comic so much.
One of my favorite comic moments of all time.
Oh my God! I forget how I forget how much we bonded over not comic books in general all the time, but over like one or two panels, we'd sit and read like 20 times and laugh about. I remember Lobo and him getting into a fight next, and he becomes Lobo's best friend because Lobo was the first person ever to defeat him.
Yeah, I love the storylines. The character development was great. It was good artwork, good writing. It was a worthy series. I have not seen the result after. I know Legion exists in the New 52, but I don't think they have their own book, and I haven't really investigated on the latest storylines.
Yeah. Well, Mike, you're up on all the latest stuff. What's going on with Legion?
Legion exists in the New 52 continuity, but they haven't really delved into them at all. They had a couple series of the Legion of Superheroes. One was set in the 30th century or 31st century now, and the other one was set in the 21st century called Legion Lost, where some of the Legionnaires from the came back in time to do something and get stuck on in the present. But neither series lasted very long.
All right. Well, Tommy, why don't you tell us your favorite DC in space comic?
Well, I mean, when I think DC in space, I've got to go back and think of Adam Strange, who, came out in 1958. He was first in Showcase Comics, and then he was in his own comic titled Mysteries in Space. And I just love the look of Adam Strange. He is basically whatever you think of in terms of a 60s pulp science fiction character. He's got, jetpacks on his back. The storyline was a little goofy in that he accidentally stumbled upon Zeta Beams, which magically transformed him to another planet, Ron, where he met his girlfriend, later wife. But he's kind of what I think of when I think of DC in space.
Great. Now, for me, I was going to talk a little bit about Lobo, but we kind of covered him a little bit. So I'm going to talk about my other favorite space character, created by one of our favorite guys. We've talked to him many times, Mike Grell. Mike Grell was nice enough to draw this character for me in my sketchbook, and that character is Dawnstar.
Sploosh.
She is from the planet Starhaven, a world colonized by American Indians abducted from Earth by an unknown alien race. So once again, we see a minority with their own apartheid planet, something that kind of went as a theme for some of these comic books for a while. I think I could do a whole thesis paper just on this. Dawnstar was a beautiful, beautiful woman with giant wings with a very, very skimpy costume. I think that's kind of what drew me to the character because, let's face it, I think I was 14 at the time. And Mike Grell told me a funny story. They kept kind of censoring how her costume went when it came to her breasts, but the plunging neckline, he kept going lower and lower until it was just above her pubic bone, and no one ever told him to stop, so he took that as far as he could in some of the comic books. if you're the kind of person that likes looking at exaggerated female bodies in very skimpy outfits, I highly recommend looking up some of Dawn Star's old costumes drawn by Mike Grell.
Oh, you don't even have to limit it to Dawn Star. You could go Princess Projectra, Phantom Girl, Saturn Girl. They all had I was a teenager. Of course I was reading that comic. I had no choice.
As long as we're talking about this, I might as well do my own little bit about social relevance in comic books. Dawn Star was as stereotypical as you could possibly get for an Native American. Her superpower was that she could track things like any good sidekick Native American could back in the day, like Tonto. The giant wings that came out of her back gave her the ability to fly in space. Just very stereotypical Native American tropes all throughout the comic book when it came to her. Very cringeworthy, but it was an attempt to have some ethnic diversity in comic books. So it was a small step forward if you look at it through the lens of history. But at the time, it was pretty damn cringeworthy.
Well, if you remember, Mike Grell told us that he was forced to add that superpower of tracking. He just wanted her to have wings, but they said, well, every Legionnaire can fly because they all have the Legion flight ring. And according to the Legion of Superhero Charter, every superhero in the Legion had to have a unique power.
Well, hers was pretty unique. She could track people through space. I'm not sure what she was tracking. I mean, it's not like they broke a branch. It's not like they lived a... It's not like she put her ear to the ground and could hear the stagecoach 15 miles away.
It was the stink of the concept of midichlorians. That was the trail that's left in space.
You just made a bunch of Star Wars nerds unfriend us. Just so you know. All right, Mike, you love DC Comics. You were the biggest DC fan I knew. What was your favorite DC in space?
I am going to go with first, let me ask you as a trivia question, because you just talked about socially relevant things. Who was the first female superhero to lead a superhero team in comics?
Wasn't that Saturn Girl?
Wow, that didn't take long at all. Yes, Saturn Girl, 1963. Damn you, Tom Strange. Damn you for your knowledge of history.
Let me just say this: between the four of us, we have how many degrees?
Like 20.
We should get these by now.
Yes, Saturn Girl. But I love the Legion of Superheroes, and it not only because of the way the women were drawn when I was a teenager that attracted me to it, but the writing in it was superior to a lot of the most of the DC comics back in the day. Jim Shooter, let's go back a little bit. Jim Shooter was 14 years old and hired in 1966 to start writing the Legion of Superheroes. And one of the first things he did is try to make it more like Marvel Comics, where they had to choose between hard questions. And one of them was there was this Sun Eater was coming to destroy the universe, and the Legion could not take him on alone. So they recruited the five worst supervillains in the galaxy and put them together, unknowingly forming one of their greatest enemies, the Fatal Five, because they figured, well, okay, the supervillains have a stake in the galaxy surviving because that's where they keep all their stuff too. So,
yeah, that's where we keep our stuff. We can't let the galaxy be destroyed.
Yeah, so he actually had... Pharaoh Lad sacrificed himself in issue number 353 to save the entire universe. And this is in 1966, 67 that this is happening, which was one of the first times they had ever delved into a superhero sacrificing himself to save the others. And it was written by a teenager, which makes it even more amazing. So I love the old Legion. If you're going to read any Legion of Superheroes, I recommend you go check out the Great Darkness Saga. It was the Legion of Superheroes issues number 290 to 294. Not only are all the characterizations great, all the superheroes look really great, but it's a great story and totally encompasses a cosmic scale, because this is where Darkseid comes back with a vengeance. He had been out of... He was a legend in the 30th century that they said, oh, he disappeared in the 20th century. He's never been back. And now Darkseid's back with a vengeance, and he's kicking the Legion of Superheroes' butt. Every member of the Legion of Superheroes, whoever was a member and was still alive, came into this saga. So it's a great story, and it's actually a pretty good jumping off point because you get hooked really quickly. The brilliance of the storyline is that even though it's set in outer space and it's got a cosmic scale, it's a soap opera at its heart. Just like the Flash TV show is right now. That's a soap opera where that it just happens to have people who have superpowers. Discuss.
I think that's the running theme in the DC TV shows.
Yeah, unfortunately for me, Arrow became much more too much of a CW teenage angst soap opera for me. I had to jump out.
I have not watched all the Arrow, but I really love the Flash. And I've got to say that I was never a huge DC person growing up, but now as I'm getting a little older and kind of expanding my horizons, I've been reading a little bit more DC. And I kind of feel like I definitely should read more because it seems like all of the bad guys in the DC universe have no neck like myself. Darkseid certainly has no neck, and you know, Sinistar never had any neck. You know, I feel like I should be identifying with their villains.
You want to form Team No Neck?
I do.
Well,
I do.
Validus and the Fatal Five has no neck either, so there you go. So,
I'm just saying, most of the Marvel villains have necks.
But you cosplay who you like, not who you look like, my friend. You don't have to go this route. If that's the route we're going to go, then we're all going to be cosplaying the Vulture in 25, 30 years. By the way, Michael Keaton would make an awesome Vulture.
Yeah, he already turned it down.
God darn it.
I think he started playing Birdman.
Yeah. All right, well, let's go off on a tangent now. Hey, Josh, go off on a tangent for us, will you?
Speaking of Darkseid and the Darkseid, let's talk about lightsaber designs. Okay, Kylo Ren, the crossguard, supposedly because it's an older design. That's why it's not a consistent blade, and it needs heat vents on either side to stay stable. Is this a design you abandon going forward? Because it seems a little too practical to get rid of.
It seems intensely practical.
Well, I think all of us except Mike have actually dueled with the SCA, both heavy and light. Josh, I know you're very much into the heavy schlagers now. Would you ever fight without a crossguard?
I have fought people who use blades that are similar to katana or, you know, your typical even cruciform swords where, you know, any kind of handguard is a pretty large advantage, especially when we're dealing with weapons of quickness and finesse rather than brute force.
Mm-hmm. So you're pro handguard.
I am pro handguard.
How come no one's ever made a lightsaber with a basket hilt on it? That's what I want to
know. I was going to say, I use saber guards almost exclusively, and I love the amount of protection that my saber guard gives me. And there are often times that I will just use the guard like a buckler and just block somebody's point with the actual guard. And I really don't understand why no one in the Star Wars universe has a hand guard when it seems like it would be you would be able to do it based on the different electric options that you know some of the robots have or some of the stormtroopers have.
So now you're an expert on how electrical currents pass through metal when it comes to lightsaber design, you bastard!
No, I'm just saying that in a galaxy far, far away, a long time ago, I would have thought that somebody would have come up with something that had a little hand protection.
Yeah, like I need an actual basket hilt. I'm not screwing around. That's too easy to lose a thumb. Mike, any thoughts?
Too easy to lose a lot, like a hand.
I wish that
everyone loses a hand in Star Wars. That's the point.
Exactly. If they had a hand guard, they wouldn't lose their hand.
I can count the number of people who have two hands on one hand. That's right.
Chris?
Ahsoka?
I wish I had known this was going to be our rant topic because I would have had friend of the podcast, Bill Plash, join us. He is a member of the 501st and knows more about Star Wars than I think George Lucas does.
We should have him on. There are plenty of Star Wars comics that I haven't read.
We will have the Star Wars episode, and we will invite Bill on to.
All right.
Absolutely.
I have an entire stack of Star Wars comics that I haven't read.
I read a lot of those comics when I was younger. They were great, especially the donkey. Well, let's not get too far into it. But do you remember the Don Quixote character that was in that? Not your character from the role-playing game, but there was actually a Don Quixote-like Jedi Knight character.
Dirk Warp Widow.
No, Dirk Warp Widow was your character in the Star Wars role-playing game that we all loved. There was another one. He was really cool.
Dirk Warp Widow.
I'm not sure. Might have been Dirk Warp Widow, though.
Josh is backing me up on it. We all remember Dirk Warp Widow from the comics.
I definitely remember Dirk Warp Widow being Jedi.
Master Jedi.
We're going to have to talk about that stupid game, aren't we, when we do that episode. All right, Mikey, why don't you take us to the front of the long box? What do you got up there?
All right, well, I was going to, seeing we were talking about space, I thought it would be appropriate to talk about the Martian Manhunter, which is part of the New 52. They're currently on issue 10. By the time you hear this, issue 11 should be out. It's an interesting storyline. The idea behind it is that everything you knew about John Johns, the Martian Manhunter, is totally wrong. He is actually a weapon designed by the Martians to destroy Earth and bring about the new Mars. The Martian Manhunter realizes what's going on and destroys himself rather than be used as a weapon against Earth. But because he's a shapeshifter and has such great telepathic powers, he actually splits himself up into multiple different beings who don't realize they're the Martian Manhunter. And it's a pure classic science fiction where four or five people are getting together, realizing that they're all actually the same person, just different aspects of the person. Very interesting, very fascinating. If you like science fiction, highly recommend it. If you're not a huge science fiction fan, I would avoid it because they're starting this DC Rebirth, and they might just destroy this whole continuity and just throw it all out. Who knows what's going to happen with DC?
So the Martian Manhunter becomes the Cylon Final Five?
Sort of like that. He decides not to be used as a weapon and instead as split his personality. And because he's a shapeshifter, he's actually able to generate multiple bodies and then put his consciousness in different bodies. It's actually a very cool concept.
So, but none of the different bodies realize that they're the Martian Manhunter.
No, they don't, except for one of them who is aware, and he's the one who has to reform them.
All right. Well, that's in the front of the long box. Tommy, what you got in the back of the long box?
Well, since we're talking about space, I feel like I need to go back all the way to the terrifying time of space and talk about the Aliens comic that Dark Horse put together back in 1988. It was originally a four-issue miniseries, black and white, and it kind of took off right where the movie Aliens left off. Unfortunately, it's kind of the movie that should have happened to make Aliens 3 instead of the Aliens 3 we got. It was a fantastic series. If you like the alien design, you know, the artwork for the miniseries was absolutely wonderful. The storyline was great. It had Newt and Ripley continuing the fight. It was fantastic. And now you can find it collected as part of the Aliens omnibuses, along with all the other Alien series that Dark Horse printed after it. And, well, they printed a lot because there's like six omnibuses now.
Yeah, I agree. In the late 80s, early 90s, Dark Horse was cranking out a lot of Aliens comics, and they were always really good to read.
Always fantastic.
You know, I only read a few of them. My favorite one of those was one where they're on this planet and they started genetically breeding babies and leaving them out for the aliens to eat instead of having the aliens attack the base that they were at, and the Space Marines come and find this to be so monstrous that they not only nuke the aliens, but they nuke the people that were had survived too, or something like that. That was a pretty good comic book. I like some of those.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I think these comic books were way better than the alien storyline that continued in the movies. I think the third and fourth film would have been much better if they had just adapted the comic books.
And the artwork was incredible, too.
Yeah, really fantastic. You can pick them up digitally anywhere from like $7 to $10, depending upon if they're on sale. And can't recommend them enough if you like aliens.
Can't recommend them enough is going to have to be one of our new words for the drinking game, because we all seem to like to use that one. For my little bit here on social relevance, I've already talked about Dawnstar, so I'm actually just going to stay with that. Take a look at some of those old drawings by Mike Grell and some of those old characters, and remember that Mike Grell was on the side of history. He was tirelessly working behind the scenes to get publishers and comic book companies to not only add diversity, but add interestingly diverse characters. His characters were not just African-Americans to have African-American heroes in there. They were complex characters who had complex problems. The man that betrayed the Legion, we've talked about that in the past, really kind of sets the table for introducing complex and interesting African-American characters. It didn't go off well that time, but he didn't give up, and Mike Grell was still very, very into making a little bit of progress in comic books.
And it is Aliens Day, if you didn't know. It's April 26th.
That's right.
426.
426.
Which means nothing to our listeners, because they're not going to hear it until in May.
Well, we just didn't want to drop it on 420, because everyone was going to be busy that day anyways.
We're recording this on the 26th, Aliens Day.
All the more fitting for me to cover aliens tonight.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Exposition Man.
No
Exposition
problem.
Man. He can tell you what's going on. It's Exposition Man.
That's right, listeners. We've created a way for you to travel back in the past.
That's right.
Exposition Man has many powers. All right. I guess we should get on over to plugs. Mikey, what do you want to plug for us today?
I would like to plug Kirby Crackle, our resident house band, for providing all our music. If you haven't checked them out, go to kirbycrackle.com, check out their geek rock, or go on to iTunes and buy their music. I'd also like to plug Space City Comic Con. That's going to be going on in Houston at the end of May. I will be there doing interviews with people, and I may or may not have a booth there for Thinking Outside the Long Box. It'll all depend on who goes with me.
Okay. Are you trying to make us go with you, Mikey? You haven't even invited me yet.
No, I don't want you guys to go. I mean, I'm talking about my daughter and my niece.
Make the pretty girls stand around the booth. That's fine.
Yeah, that was my plan.
Yeah, that's,
Are they all going to cosplay as Dawnstar?
Hey, that's my daughter and my niece you're talking about, dude.
Easy killer.
Whoa. My niece is only 17, for God's sakes.
Yeah, but that's a hard 17.
You guys both need to unfriend her on Facebook now.
I'm just saying, we all know what a hard 17 is, and she's a hard 17. Josh,
that's when you roll a 9 and an 8. you'd have to roll 8.5, 8.5. How is that a hard 17?
It can be done. That's all I'm saying. Josh, you have anything you want to add?
I am going to once again plug markmckennaart.com. Go check out Mark McKenna's art. Mikey, are we doing his interview tonight?
Thank you for asking. We are not. We've got Barry Gregory, who is awesome in himself. And, in fact, why don't we listen to Barry Gregory's interview right now?
Hey, wait a minute. You didn't even get to my plugs.
You can do your plug after we talk to Barry Gregory.
Oh. People aren't going to stick around and listen to my plugs.
That's true. Is also true.
Wait a second. You're saying that people just stop listening when our interviews start? Or is that what you're saying you do?
No, I'm saying they're not going to then listen to my plugs after the interview's over.
Why not?
Tommy,
people
just
stop listening after the interview?
just because you're a narcissist who can't stand listening to our podcast after your voice is no longer on the air doesn't mean everybody tunes out.
We know that LT does not listen to our podcast.
That's true. LT has famously told us many times he's never listened to a single episode.
I've listened to all the podcasts except for the one that just got put out today.
a likely story. How come you've never complained about all those all the stories and stuff that you tell that I cut totally out of the podcast?
Because I'm not a big complainer.
Oh, all right.
And I know that if I did complain, you would just edit it out of the podcast.
Much like this conversation we're having right now.
This entire thing is out of the podcast. All right, let's go over to that interview right now, guys.
I'm Barry Gregory, and you're listening to The Long Box.
Now, you are one of the innovators in the comic industry. You set up the Indie Planet, is that correct?
Yeah, I'm one of the co-owners of Indie Planet and Kablam Digital Printing.
And could you explain to our listeners what Indie Planet is versus what Kablam is?
Yeah, Kablam is a digital print shop, and our niche is comics and paperbacks. That's all we do. We're a specialty shop, so we're not a full service print bureau. We just do comics and paperbacks, and that's a service that's available to anyone who wants to take advantage of it. Indie Planet is a sister website that we've set up at Kablam that. Anyone who prints their comic or their paperback at Kablam has an open invitation to list it at Indie Planet, which is just a big web store, and we'll help sell copies of the of your comics, and we do all the order fulfillment, and you set your cover price, we subtract the printing cost, you get 100% of the difference, and you do nothing except give us the book. We fulfill the orders and do the shipping and all that. That's how it works.
All right, now, for those listeners out there who are interested in doing something like that, what is the advantage of using Kablam versus a regular printer?
The big advantage is the barrier to entry is so much lower. At Kablam, we can print one copy of your book. You don't need to have a minimum 3,000 print run or anything like that. So you get your book together, you get your files together, you place an order with us, order one copy, make sure it's what you want it to be, and then you can come back and reorder at your convenience anytime. There's never a minimum. There's some price breaks for when the quantities get higher. But, you can always just order one and suddenly you're in,
So you've got your own imprint, is that correct?
That's correct, yeah. I've also have a publishing company called Gallant Comics. We've got two titles right now. We've got John Amon Amazing Man, which we just released our fifth issue. And the second title is The Extraordinary Miniature Man, and our first issue of that one is out.
Now, these are all Golden Age heroes, correct?
They're based on versions of Golden Age characters that are in the public domain. So John Amon the Amazing Man is our flagship title and our flagship character. He was created by Bill Everett, the same guy that created Namor the Submariner. Actually, he created them both a couple of weeks apart when he was like 21 years old or something like that. And John Amon, long since, the copyright lapsed and fell into the public domain. But he's been a very influential character in comics history, even though most people don't realize it. He was kind of the inspiration for the Peter Cannon Thunderbolt character. The character himself actually plays a role in the origin of Iron Fist. There's a lot of the original John Amon story is co-opted for Marvel's Iron Fist character. He's a character that's in both the Marvel and DC universes right now in a small role, but he's been a pretty influential character in comics history, even though most people have forgotten that he exists.
Now, is the Golden Age your favorite age of comic books, or?
I like comics, period. But I'm a child of the Bronze. I grew up in the 70s reading, the great comics written by, people like Chris Claremont and Don McGregor and Tony Isabella and Steve Gerber, Steve Englehart. That's my era. And so that's the thing that most inspires me.
Now, you also used to work for Malibu, correct?
I did. I did some color work for Malibu back on the Ultraverse line. I sold a few scripts to them for some of their anthologies that they did around that time too.
Now, what were those comics?
One was called Tales from Planet X, and the others are escaping me. Some of the Ultraverse titles I worked on were. Mantra, Prototype, Sludge, Nightman, Freaks, And may have been some others too, but those are the only ones that come to mind.
Yeah, I collected Freaks and Nightman and Strangers.
Yeah, I worked on Strangers.
I like the Ultraverse. I thought it was a great concept, and it was nice that there was an alternative to just DC and Marvel.
Actually, the Prime character in the Ultraverse has a lot of John Amon in him. You know, the green goo that came out of that was straight out of Amazing Man. The idea of transforming because of the green mist stuff. Yeah, that was all John Amon influence too.
We do a panel on horrible stereotypes in comics. Is there one character out there that you think is indicative of a horrible stereotype?
There's a lot out there, but I don't think there are any really bad characters. There's only bad interpretations of characters. I think you can take a character that's perceived to be the worst, the dumbest idea that anybody's ever came up with, and you put the right spin on it, and it can be, genius. The example that immediately comes to mind for me is Howard the Duck. Okay, so you've got this superhero universe at Marvel, and then suddenly there's this talking duck. It shouldn't have worked, but instead it's absolutely brilliant. I don't think there are any bad characters, just bad interpretations.
Awesome. And is there anything you would like to talk about other than everybody should go buy Galleon Comics?
Well, everybody should go buy our Gallant Comics and our action figure. We've just got our John Amon Amazing Man action figure just came out. But I want to say, too, that here at Pensacon this weekend, this is a great convention, a truly great convention. One of my highlights of the year is coming here.
Now, you own a comic book store, is that correct?
No, I've worked in comic stores in the past, but I don't own one now, no.
Is there any title out there that you read other than your own that you would recommend somebody to check out?
There's lots of titles that I read. I love Revival from Image. The Sixth Gun is one of my favorites. Manifest Destiny is really terrific. I rag on DC a lot, but their new Swamp Thing with Len Wein and Kelly Jones was terrific. I love comics.
I can tell because you have multiple genres and all the stuff that you just named. You were Western, you were historic with Manifest Destiny and superhero and then supernatural. Is there for you as a writer, is there a genre that's your favorite to write?
I like superheroes and I like Westerns. I'm writing a Western novel right now, so Westerns are really, in my brain. But I like supernatural stuff too, so of course it's a supernatural Western. But yeah, those Westerns and superheroes and supernatural, that's me.
All right, excellent. Well, thank you very much for your time.
Sure, happy to do it.
Thank you.
All right, that just about does it for Thinking Outside the Long Box. Tommy, did you have any plugs you want to get in right before we go?
I do have some plugs. Strangely enough, I want to plug IanLino.com, IanLeino.com, purveyor of fine t-shirts, glasses, and other geeky stuff. Go to IanLino.com. Also, I would like to plug Wizard World of Philadelphia at the beginning of June. We were planning on doing some panels at Wizard World in June in Philadelphia. I can't wait to go.
That's right. I was going to mention that also. We're going to be doing a panel or two, hopefully more than one this time in Philadelphia, one of our favorite cities to do it in. And last but not least, let me just say, check out our Twitter page over at Outside the Long Box, at the Long Box, guys. And we have a lot of fun stuff up there. And that's about it for me. Anyone have any last thoughts?
I haven't had any thoughts the whole podcast.
The entire thought? Well, I'm pretty
close. I do have one thought.
Oh, Lord.
Don't diss what you hate. Promote what you love.
Well said, Tommy. Couldn't said better myself. For all of us, have a great night, guys.
All your friends are gone. The one true flag that kept you strong has moved on. And you never said goodbye. It never was the plan. But you never looked back, you became the man, now it's over. Dream has died away, oh Tony Stark. You pulled the world apart, and now you fix that. Oh, Tony Stark, you pulled the world apart. Now you've got to fix it. Now you've got to fix it. Now you've got to fix it.